Okay, this week is Parshas Va'era. What I want to do today is, I think you've gotten the sense that most of what I try to do is point out things in the text more than anything, and to not try to repeat ideas that may have heard in the past, because I find that in Parsha classes, some ideas are often very much repeated. So, having said that, first of all, I heard an idea. Sometimes I listen to classes on whyutorah.org, and there was one idea which really I found compelling, and that is, did I mention it here last week? I wonder if I mentioned it here. It was Rabbi Yitzchak Et Shalom from Los Angeles. So I want to show it to you inside. Take a look at what he says here on page 318. Yeah, I did mention it. But he says, God tells Moshe, starting in Pasuk Vav, he says, I'm going to take them out of Egypt. So verse 6, L'chein emor l'vnei Yisrael, ani Hashem, v'otzei si'eschem mitachas siflos Mitzrayim. So he says, you have to tell the B'nai Yisrael that I'm going to do the following. There are five things which he says. Hotzei si'eschem, I'm going to take you out from the siflos, the burdens. Next line, first word, v'hitzalti eschem, and I'm going to save them, me'avad asam, from their work. V'go'alti eschem, and I'm going to redeem them, or you, b'zroa netuya, with an outstretched hand, u'vishfatim g'dolim, and with great judgments, v'lachakti eschem li'la'am, and I will take you guys to be my nation, v'ayisi lachem le'lohim, so that's like a two-part deal, v'lachakti, I will take, v'ayisi, and then I will be, for them a god, V'idatem ki ani Hashem, and you'll know that I am God. Hamotzias chamitachas sivlos mitzrayim, who takes you out of Egypt. That's an important phrase, of course, which is going to get repeated in the Ten Commandments, right? Anochi Hashem elokecha asher tzeisichem eretz Mitzrayim. V'heivesias chem al aretz, and I will bring you to the land that I promised Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. Okay, so we have five, maybe even if you count V'ayisi, six terms which describe a process of what the Exodus is going to look like. And we're familiar with these also because we typically assign them to the cups at the Seder. And so what each of these demonstrate is a stage of Exodus. So the interesting argument that Rabbi Et Shalom made was that the word Geula means a return to the way things were. What's the proof to that? So in the Torah, towards the end of the book of Vayikra, there's a discussion about what's called the Yovel, the Jubilee year. After 7 cycles of the Shemitah year, okay, so 49 years, the 50th year is the Yovel year. It's a year in which the land would lay fallow, and they would blow the shofar, and it was a celebratory year for in a bunch of different ways. But one of the features of Yovel is that Geulat Yela Aretz, there's a redemption to the land. And what happens? V'shavtem isha l'chuz aso v'isha el mishpachtot ashuvu, that each land that had been somehow rented, leased, sold, would actually return to its ancestral property. Okay, so in other words, if you're from the tribe of, let's say Menashe, and you had a piece of property which you've been leasing or renting or even sold it to somebody from a different family of either Menashe or even a different tribe, which, can work out. You can make such a business arrangement. Yovel comes, first rights go back to the original owner. Okay, that's certainly for a lease, and that's why when the Torah actually describes something like a lease, it says that a person would have to take into account when is Yovel, and depending on when Yovel is, will determine how many years will I, the renter, or the leasee, have on this property, and that would determine what the price would be, because at the Yovel year, it goes back to the landlord. So, but that's what Geula means. Geula means a return to the way things were. So Rabbi Et Shalom made that point and said that the goal of Hotzei Si Eschem, all of this was supposed to take place in Egypt, because we're only 210 years, or when Moshe shows up, let's say 209 years into their time in Egypt. And so, to take them out of their burdens, and to save them from their work, and to redeem them, means to return them to their status that they had when they came down to Egypt under Yosef's rule. Because what were they then? Members of the royal family, or at least relatives of the royal family. And so they were able to be at the very least upper middle class, right? If nothing even if not higher, so that all that could have taken place in Egypt, and then these slaves who may have forgotten a little bit about what brings them together, other than their slavery, but in other words, they have a common ancestor or common ancestors, that they would learn in the land who they are and what they are. And as Moshe says to Pyro at the end of last week's parsha, we want a 3-day journey into the wilderness. And during that 3-day journey, what's going to happen? They're going to serve God. They're going to worship God. Maybe they get the Torah. And then they come back to Egypt and live out their time as, you know, again, upper middle class, whatever it may be, until such time as their exile is over. And then they leave at the end of 400 years as promised to Abraham. But things changed. How did things change? Why does that idea not really happen? Because Paro is Mr. Stubborn. But not just is Mr. Stubborn, he's Mr. Too Arrogant than he needs to be. How so? Moshe comes in and says, this is what God, Hashem Elokei Yisrael, Hashem Elokei Avrim said, let my people out. And Paro, instead of saying, interesting, I'll think about it, right? Which, you know, that's reasonable. He says, who is this God of yours? Never heard of him? I don't care. Oh, really? Really? Game changer. How is it a game changer? You look at every single plague, and I'm going to show you a theme now. If you never noticed this, then you'll notice it after today. I'm going to point that out in a moment, but I just wanted to show you a couple things here, and we're going to get back to that idea of what becomes the goal of the plagues. Okay, so first of all, remember, Moshe is supposed to give all these instructions to whom? That we just saw on page 318. To the B'nai Israel, right? Okay, take a look at the top of page 320. Daber Moshe Kein El B'nai Israel, Pasuk 9, Pasuk Tes. V'lo Shamu El Moshe Mikotzer Ruach Me'Avodakosha. So Moshe tells them, and they're not listening. Why? Shortness of breath, difficulty of labor. I mean, it just they're focused on what they have to do. It's hard, Moshe. You have your fanciful ideas of what's going to take place. We don't have time. Somebody's beating us, and we have to get the job done. So the problem that Moshe's faced because of that is, look at the next pasuk. I mean, not by Daber Hashem Moshe anymore, but Bo Daber Pasuk Yidal 11. Bo Daber Al Paro Melech Mitzrayim Vishalach Es Bnei Yisrael Miyartzo. Go, come and speak to Paro, and that he should send Bnei Yisrael out. And what's Moshe's response? Hein Bnei Yisrael lo shamu elai ve'ech yishmeni Paro. Bnei Yisrael didn't listen, how's Paro going to listen? Moshe's concern is that the Bnei Yisrael aren't convinced that they should want to leave. Because what have they resigned themselves to? To, this is our life, this is we're slaves, and that's what we are. And it's a slave mentality which takes a very long time to get over. But that's the first part. And then Moshe says, Va'ani Aras Vasayim. If we have time, maybe I'll come back to this at the end. Va'ani Aras Vasayim. Because Moshe says this again later. But Va'idaber Hashem Moshe al Aron, Pasuk Gimel, Va'itzaveim el B'nei Yisrael ve'el Paro Melech Mitzrayim, Letzias B'nei Yisrael Melech Mitzrayim. So now Moshe's job as well changes. Okay? What do I mean? At the burning bush, God said, the B'nei Yisrael, they're going to listen to you. And Moshe comes in with the signs, and he shows them to the B'nei Yisrael, and the Pasuk says, they listened. And then Moshe goes to Paro, and Paro does not listen. And not only that, but Paro makes the work harder and worse. And so the people, at the end of the last six parshas, the people complain to Moshe. Moshe, what are you doing? And Moshe, at the very end of the parsha, the last two pesukim of the parsha, Moshe says, God, ever since I came to Paro, things, I know you said it wasn't going to happen right away, but things have gotten worse. Everybody hates me. And so when Paro makes that change, the B'nai Yisrael, even though they heard Moshe and they accepted that he came from God, they get fed up with him very, very quickly. Very quickly. And so now Moshe has a two-pronged strategy of who he needs to convince to let the B'nai Yisrael out. Paro, yeah. But Paro has a very easy argument. They don't want to leave. So what are you bothering? And he even says this to Moshe. What are you bothering the people for? They're happy in their routine. It's good for them. Slavery is good for them. Okay, whatever that means. So this is what Moshe needs to do. Now, let's take a look. Okay, turn to page 324. Okay. So, What I just skipped, and again, maybe we'll get back to it if I get through the points that I want to get, but what I've just skipped is the lineage which is given here, which essentially introduces us to who Moshe and Aaron are. Some use this as the anti-Jesus argument to show that Moshe and Aaron, they had parents, they were human beings, and to assume that they, you know, that the only way you can get a salvation is by calling somebody a son of a god or something like that. Obviously, you don't need that. Moshe and Aaron, everybody knew who they were, they knew who their relatives were, and all that. Okay. So now, Hashem says to Moshe on the top page 324, I'm gonna harden maybe Paro's heart, and I'm going to multiply my signs and wonders, etc. in Egypt. Paro's not gonna listen, and I'm gonna put my hand against Egypt, and I'm gonna take out my legions of my nation. Pasukei, this is the key. V'yadu Mitzrayim ki ani Hashem. Egypt will know that I am Hashem. Because remember what Paro said. Mi Hashem. Who's God? I don't know who this is. And so Hashem says that that's going to be the goal. V'yadu Mitzrayim ki ani Hashem. And what you're going to see is that that theme in different formats repeats itself over and over again. Okay? So I'm going to be sharing you a number of insights throughout, because what this parsha has is the first seven plagues starting almost here, and the next parsha has the last three plagues. So what I want to do is just share with you a few insights about each of the plagues to just give you a more global perspective on the parsha, and along with doing that, show you the points where it says that the people will know. In other words, that the goal is that Paro will know. The Paro in Egypt will know. Okay? Sounds like a plan? Yeah. Sounds like a plan. Okay, the first thing that happens is in Revi'i, Pasuk Tes. So Moshe and Aaron, they're going to come to Paro again. They're basically reorganizing their strategy to let Paro know about how God's going to be bringing these plagues. And so the first thing that they do is they come to Paro, and Hashem tells them, when Paro says to you, oh yeah, give a sign, prove it, prove who you are. V'amarta el Aaron. I'm in Pasuk Tes, the second line there, towards the end of the line. And now the next line. Kach es matacha v'yashlech es lifnei Paro yihi l'tanin. You're going to tell Aaron, I'm assuming that there's a quote here. Aaron, take your staff and throw it in front of Paro, and it should become a tanin. Okay, now in last week's parsha, we saw that Moshe was given a sign to take his own staff and throw it to the ground, and it becomes a, what was the Hebrew word? Anyone remember? In the Torah. Remember at the burning bush when he throws it down? Nachash, yeah, a nachash. Okay, now what's a nachash and what's a tanin? So a nachash is some kind of a snake, right? We know of the nachash all the way back from the Garden of Eden. What's a tanin? Is it a snake? So Rashi says it's a nachash. Okay, Rashi says tanin, nachash. But not everybody agrees with Rashi. And especially, there's a pasuk in Yechezkel which Paro describes himself as a Tanim Agadol. Now I'm noting that it's spelled a little differently. It's spelled with a mem at the end as opposed to this, which is Tanin, but there is nobody I haven't seen anybody who thinks that a Tanim and a Tanin is not the same animal. The only difference that they are is that one is probably the one with the mem is a masculine and the Tanin is a feminine, a female, you know, of this species of animal. Okay? Okay. So what does that mean? Aaron is being told to throw his staff. It's not Moshe's staff. Moshe's becomes a nachash. Aaron's becomes a tanin. What does that even mean? Okay, so God can do whatever he wants. No problem. I'm sure people do have a problem with it. I don't have a problem with it. But the point is that there's a very good chance that a tanin is something more like a crocodile. Okay, and we have this with in ancient Egypt when you had different kinds of gods. And they had different kinds of, you know, the heads on those the statues, or on the pharaoh, whatever the headdress which they would have. So I know on Tutankhamun, I think it is that you have one which is like a cobra. That's one. But some of them they had this crocodile as an image. And the idea is, I don't remember which of the commentary says this, but the idea is that Aaron taking his staff and turning it into a tanin is showing Paro, look, I control a tanin, which means I control you, because Paro fancied himself, again, like that verse in Yechezkel says, as the Tanim Hagadol, right? The great Tanim. Again, I'm which I've always understood ever since I, you know, learned a little past just looking Rashi and just seeing other commentaries that the tannin is a crocodile. So that's one thing to bear in mind, and it also demonstrates the idea of manipulation of paro. Okay, so they do the same thing, but as we know, what happens with Aaron's staff is that it consumes their staffs. So it just goes to show, that's at the top of page 326. And by the way, when the movie shows a snake eating a snake, okay, the movie clearly did not read the text, because the text says, Vayevla mate Aharon is matosam. Okay, it does not say that his tanin ate their tanins. It says his staff ate their staffs. Okay. So, now that, by the way, that's a fascinating question, which I never even considered, just came to my mind right now. You know, if we accept, for example, that Aaron's staff thrown to the ground can morph into a tanin, okay, and we're assuming that that's not a magical trick, that is a godlike, I mean, that only God can do. What about Paro's magicians? It says that they're turning them into their own staffs into tanins as well. So are they doing the exact same thing that Aaron's doing? Or is it, you know, like David Copperfield, smoke and mirrors? Okay, if you watch The Prince of Egypt, and not that I'm bringing proof for The Prince of Egypt, but they have these guys doing it, and it's puffs of smoke. Puffs of smoke, and the point is that the makers of Prince of Egypt, three Jewish boys, right? Spielberg, Katzenberg, Katz, whatever his name was in Geffen. So they recognize that Egyptian sorcery may have been smoke and mirrors. So, okay, so what does that mean? Where were their staffs? They hid them, right? I mean, unless they were able to manipulate the cosmos and turn it into a staff. So if Aaron's staff eats their staffs, okay, that means it somehow sought out these staffs that may have been hidden away. Just something to think about. I don't know. Anyway, Hashem says to Moshe, Kaved le paro, pasuk yidalet. Paro's heart is heavy or stubborn. He's not sending the people out. So I want you to go down to him at the water. And look at what it says, by the way. Pasuk tesvav. V'hamateh asher nepach l'nachash tikach miyadecha. You see that? It's the end of that pasuk, 15. V'hamateh asher nepach l'nachash tikach miyadecha. Okay, now we just read the pasuk about the one that turned to a tanin. Which staff turned into a nachash? Is it the same staff? Come on, this is not a trick question. Which staff turned into a nachash? Moshe's staff. No, Moshe, Aaron. We just saw Aaron's staff turn into a tanin. Moshe's staff turned into a nachash. That's the language of the text. A nachash is a snake. So God tells Moshe, take the staff that turned into a snake in your hand. And I want you to go to him and say, Hashem Elokei Abraham, God sent me, and you haven't listened. Look at Pasuk Zayin, 17, Ka'amar Hashem, Bezos Teida Ki Ani Hashem. Okay, remember what the goal is. It's not just about Exodus anymore. You, Paro, need to know Ki Ani Hashem, that I am God, that I am Hashem. And so, what are you going to do? Now, read carefully the Pasuk. Okay, and if you haven't heard me tell this before in a Parsha class, then this might blow your mind, and I apologize in advance. Pasuk Yitzayin says, this is all part of what Hashem has told Moshe to say to Paro, which started in the middle of Pasuk Tezayin, the previous Pasuk. And he says, Ko amar Hashem, this is what Hashem says, Bezoz teidak yene Hashem, with this you, Paro, will know that I am Hashem. Hine anochi mateh, I am going to, makeh, I'm going to strike. Who's I am going to strike? No, who's talking to Paro? Who's giving these words to God? Is telling Moshe what to say. So this is a quote. Moshe, I'm giving you a script. This is what I want you to say. He ko amar Hashem. Right? This is what Hashem said. Okay? Hine anochi makeh b'mateh. I, meaning Moshe, am going to strike with the staff that is in my hand, alamayim, on the water, asher bayor, of the river, v'nefchul adam, and they will turn to blood. V'adagay asher bayor tamus, and the fish will die, uva'ash hayor, and the river will become disgusting, v'nil'u mitzrayim l'shtos mayim in hayor, and Egypt will not be able to drink water from the river. Does it say Egypt will not have any water at all? No, it says you won't be able to drink water from the river. End quote. V'yomer Hashem Moshe, and Hashem says to Moshe, emor el Aharon, tell Aharon the following. Quote, this is a script from Moshe to tell Aaron. Aaron, Listen up, buddy or brother. Kach matacha, take your staff. Whose staff? Aaron's staff. Hunateyarcha, and stretch your hand. Al meme mitzrayim, over the waters of Egypt. Al harasam al yorehem al gwehem al komik meme mehem yudam. On every waterway that you can get to, okay, and they'll be blood. Vayodam b'chol eretz mitzrayim uvayitzimu b'avanim, and now there'll be blood everywhere, including in the wood and in the stones. Now the wood and the stones might be a reference to the idols, by the way, which are normally made out of sticks and stones, as we like to sometimes say, we don't bat at sticks and stones. So as opposed to in the trees and in rocks, because who cares if blood is in a rock that's over there, but if it's in a rock that you worship, then that's a sign of a patch. That's what the Torah says. That's what the Torah describes at the burning bush. That Moshe was told, throw your staff to the ground, it turns into a snake. He's told, grab it by the tail, he picks it up, and it turns back into a staff in his hand. And that's one of the signs that God gave him to convince Israel that he was sent by God. That's for Moshe.
Sources of water are gone.
Ah, hold on. So that hasn't happened yet. Let's take a look at the very next passage. V'yasu chein Moshe ve'aron. Moshe and Aaron did as they were instructed. Kasher tzivu Hashem. Vayorem b'mate v'yachas samayim asher b'yor l'nei paro l'nei avadav. He lifted his stick and struck the water of the river to the eyes of Paro and to the eyes of his servants. Who did that? I mean, at least the way the Torah just says it. Okay, I mean, you can say Aaron. Rashi says Aaron. So you're standing on good shoulders. But if you read the Psukim, Moshe told Paro, I'm going to be striking the river. And the instruction to Aaron is strike every other waterway. There's Hayor, the river, okay, which presumably is the Nile. And then there's every other waterway. Look at go back to Pasuk Yedas. Aaron, take your staff, look in English. Take your staff, stretch out your hand over the waters of Egypt, over their rivers, over their canals, over their reservoirs, over all their gatherings of water, and they shall become blood. Okay? Then the Pasuk is vague in Pasuk 20. Look at the English. He held the staff aloft and struck the water that was in the river. That wasn't Aaron's instruction. That was what Moshe was supposed to do. In the presence of Aaron, the presence of his servants, etc. Okay? And then everything that follows in the first half of Pasuk Chaf Aleph is that the fish die, the water is disgusting, they can't drink water from the river. That's all that Moshe said he was going to do. Next part of the Pasuk, Vayihi Adam, Bichol Eretz Mitzrayim, that's what Aaron was supposed to do. Head every other waterway that he could get to. Now how's Aaron going to get around to every single waterway? I don't know, he might not get to every other waterway. How do I know he doesn't get to every other waterway? Because, first of all, the Egyptians, Pasuk says, Pasuk HaVeis, they do the same thing, right? But how can they do the same thing if everything's already been turned into blood? Obviously, everything has not been turned into blood. Not only that, look at Pasuk Chaf Dalet, 24. Vayachperu kol Mitzrayim sivos hayor mayim l'shtos, ki lo yichlu l'shtos mimim hayor. So, like in Florida, where the water table is pretty high, okay? So people can dig around the river and find underground water, and they can get water that way. And that's why, if you look at the previous verse, Paro's looking around, and he doesn't pay any attention. You know why? All right, nice fancy trick. So you knock the river out for a week. Whatever. We have water. We can drink. I saw a fascinating interpretation. You know why else Paro didn't care? Paro's the king. You know what else Paro has a lot of in his house? Bottled water, right?
Wine.
Only water turned to blood, not wine. So, if you're the king, it's good to be the king, right?
What's happening to the Jews at this time? Right. They didn't have any water either.
No, so they're not, for whatever reason, they're not affected.
She says, okay,
go ahead, no, go ahead.
No, go. I don't want to get it.
No, what does he say?
No, but it says on the bottom, if you look at 21, that it was only for the Egyptians.
Right, so that is a classic interpretation that it was only Egypt who was affected, right? Because it says
so.
So Listen, when you look through the plagues, and it's actually fun to make a chart of this, to see these distinctions, you'll see that a number of times the pasuk will say something to the effect of Vifla Hashem Bein Mitzrayim LeYisrael. Okay, that God made a distinction between what happened to the Egyptians and the Israelites. And there are actually some commentaries who are of the view that when it doesn't say that, the Jews were equally affected. Which is, you know, an interesting question, but you know, I don't think that's a majority viewpoint. Okay, now I just wanted to share with you a new thought that I have this book that I finally picked off my shelf and been reading it. Rabbi Yaakov Meidan, who is currently one of the Rosh Yeshiva at Yeshiva Har Tzion, so he has a number of articles in every parsha in this book, and so he said, you know, it's interesting, and I'll just as an aside, I remember when I was in ninth grade, we took ninth grade biology, and I don't remember, I don't think our biology teacher was Jewish, but for whatever reason, at some point in time, maybe during that year, no, it was ninth grade, so it wasn't, that came out a couple years later. Okay, The Prince of Egypt came out while I was in high school, so that's what I was just thinking about, but anyway, we were telling him about the plagues, and he was listening to every single thing that we were describing, and he said, oh my God, that could happen in nature. And he's explaining how each thing could happen in nature. He said, you know, there's a frog that frogs come out of its mouth. He said, yeah, there's a frog like that. I'm like, okay, maybe if with Google you could probably find something like that. Okay, what Rav Meidan does here is he argues, how could you view the plagues as a natural phenomenon? Okay, now we actually screened here a couple years ago a movie. It was a YouTube video, but a long one, a video I found on YouTube, that tried to explain a number of the plagues as a natural phenomenon, and tried to explain the river as having, you know, turning red, that looked like blood, like an algae kind of thing, and showed how this kind of weird natural thing can take place, but that's not what the Torah says. The Torah says dam, it says blood, it doesn't say red. So that's not a compelling argument to somebody who believes in the word of the Torah. So Rav Meidan says, no, you know, there is an action which takes place when the water turns to blood. Okay, what's the action? A staff, right? There is an action which takes place when the frogs come out of the water. Same action, staff. There is an action which takes place when the ground all of a sudden becomes, you know, the kinim, the lice. What's that action? Staff, strike the ground. So he says, I mean, the only way that I could, you know, we thank God for film in a way, because it sometimes gives us images that we can't necessarily imagine. But I was thinking of a different image as well. Anybody here familiar with what a depth charge is?
Yeah.
You know what a depth charge is? Yeah, it's what's used by whatever battleship to try to sink a submarine. Okay, in other words, it's something that they drop to where they think the submarine is, and they try to get it to the depth of where the submarine is, and so that it will explode and sink the submarine. Okay, that's it. So a submarine, in order to avoid depth charge, has to, you know, basically quiet down, sink as low as they can, or depending on where the depth charges are hitting, maybe even, well, you don't want to go too high up, because if too high up, then they can certainly nail you. But they have to just basically disappear while they're down there. So, but what's the point? The point is that a depth charge makes some kind of explosion that has a ripple effect, but not just a huge ripple. So we have this as, I mean, they have this in superhero movies also, where somebody like hits the ground and everything just explodes. So I was thinking about that in reading what Rav Meidan was saying, because he says, look, if with the right kind of power, and we're talking divine anyway, but if the right kind of power can go in and strike the water hard enough that it could, I mean, he uses an example of killing the taninim, right? Again, another message to Paro, right? We control the tanin, okay? Then all these tanins die, and what happens? They're going to ooze out blood, and the Nile may have been filled with these crocodiles. And if that's going to happen, then the Nile being filled with blood from these creatures is going to kill all the fish, and it's going to become gross. So then what happens? Then you strike it again, and there's another element, the frogs, which were on the periphery, because who wants to be in watery, you know, they can get out. Unlike the fish that can't get out, the frogs can survive outside. So when the water clears up, they can go back inside. Another, boom, depth charge gets the frogs to all come out of the river. And were they created? Were they? Was it just a new frog, or that just, you know, emerged supernaturally from the water? Or was it a real frog? And he says the same thing about the makkah of kinim, of lice, that when you hit the ground with the right kind of energy, you know, assume a mini earthquake of some kind, then all these critters that are underneath the ground, living their lives underneath, they're just going to emerge to scurry around because they can't move as fast down below as they can move up above. And so when you imagine those kinds of connections, so it gives a different perspective. Now, does that take away from the miraculous nature of the plagues? I don't think so. I think you know, the idea that any of those things that Rabbi Dan suggests as possibilities could take place certainly is only going to work in the scale that it's going to work with divine involvement. I mean, I don't see any other way that you can explain that. But just something to think about in terms of how we look at all of this. Okay, we continue, and just to finish the point with Moshe and Aaron's involvement. So yes, there is that, certainly the message that Aaron does those three things: the blood, the frogs, and the lice. Because Moshe was indebted to the water because his life was saved in the water, and he's indebted to the ground because he was able to hide the Egyptian in the ground. So there's what to be said about that, and there's gratitude and hakaras hatov, and not to, you know, strike these things. But I just find that in reading the text, kipshuto, the way that the Torah describes things, that it doesn't follow. In other words, it seems that Moshe and Aaron each have their own kind of role when it comes to the plague of blood. Okay. As opposed to the plague of frogs. Look at the beginning of chapter 8. Plague of frogs. Vayomer Hashem Moshe, Emor el Aaron. Hashem says to Moshe, tell Aaron, Netei es yadcha, stretch your hand b'matecha with your staff, Aaron's staff, al ne'aroz v'al yorim v'al agamim v'al asetzfardim al eretz mitzrayim. Vayet Aaron es yadcha. Right? It doesn't say that Moshe is involved. So in the plague of blood, I think that Moshe is involved. In the plague of frogs, he's not involved because he's not mentioned. Only Aaron has an instruction, and so that in fact happens. Do we find here via the Mitzrayim?
But it does say Hashem says to Moshe, "Come to Paro and say to him." He does say that.
Yes, he does say that. But what does he say? Hinei Anochi Nogeves Kol Gvulchavat Tzfardeim. So I'm going to plague your borders with frogs. But that's a general comment. That doesn't mean that I'm going to be taking the action that's going to be bringing about the frogs. Look at the last line on the page. Or last pasuk on the page, rather. On page 328. Pasuk Dal. Vayikra Paro l'Moshe l'Aaron vayomer hatiru el Hashem. Ooh, mission accomplished. Paro is saying, seek out, I mean, right, turn to God, and get rid of the frogs. Va'ashalcha es ha'am v'yizbichu l'Hashem. Did you ever notice that already in the plague of frogs, Paro agrees to let them go? Did you ever notice that?
No.
Paro agrees so many times. You know when I first noticed this? I'm embarrassed to say it. I first noticed it when I watched the movie Moses, starring Ben Kingsley, when in the middle of the plague of frogs, Paro says he can go, and everybody he comes out, and everybody's like, yay, we can leave! He gets rid of the frogs, and then Paro says no. I'm like, that can't be. I open up the Chumash, like, wow, I've never read this. Unbelievable. But Yomer Moshe LeParo is paralyzed. So Moshe says to Paro, okay, great. When do you want the frogs to leave? I'll do it. And then, and in fact, he does it. And then what happens is, Pasuk Yid Aleph, page 330. Vayar Paro ki yisar v'chav yachbed es libo v'lo shema alihem kasher diber Hashem. Okay, he got his wish, Paro. And so he does not let them go. Okay, the next plague, the third in each series of three, does not have a warning. So the plague of lice, again, Moshe, Hashem says to Moshe and Aaron, I'm sorry, Hashem says to Moshe, tell Aaron, Neteyas Madcha. So Aaron is involved only in the Afar Arts. Now, by the way, it's an interesting question, okay? You know, we see that Aaron is clearly using his staff Okay, it's not like, you know, in the movie they have Moshe giving Aaron Moshe's staff and Aaron doing stuff with Moshe's staff. That's incorrect. That it's clear that Moshe and Aaron each have a staff that they, whatever they use, they, you know, it's a walking stick, whatever they use it for. And Aaron is told to use his own staff for some of these things. So, is there a difference between the use of Moshe's staff and the use of Aaron's staff? And I think the answer is yes. I think that Moshe's staff is used for big deal stuff. Big deal stuff. Now, I'm not saying that these other things aren't big deal, but big deal meaning on the spectacle that everybody sees the action with the staff. Moshe's staff was a nachash. For whom? Who was supposed to see Moshe's staff turn into a nachash? All of B'nai Israel. Who sees Aaron's staff turn into a tanin? In Paro's room, whatever room that is. So it's a few people. Who sees the river? The river. This is the river. You ever see where the Nile River goes? Shh, the whole country. Who sees the river?
Everybody.
Moshe. Who sees this? If you're there, you see it. Okay? So that's Aaron. Who sees... So the frogs coming out, it's not so much that... Of course everybody sees the frogs. But they see the frogs. They don't see the action of what is done in front of Paro. Paro, watch. This is for you to see, not for everybody to see. Boom, here come the frogs. The Kenim. Who sees the Kenim? Who is he doing it in front of? Nobody. Nobody sees it. So Aaron's scale of spectacle is much smaller than Moshe's. Not that Aaron's actions don't produce large-scale stuff, but in terms of who sees it, it's a much smaller audience. And that's a difference that I find.
I think also the connection is really between Moshe and Hashem. Aaron just hears it from Moshe, but Moshe hears it...
Of course. But the fact is, look, does God need Aaron's staff to do this action?
No.
But... there's something about taking, you know, me'akoach el ha'poal, right? That you have to take an initiative. You take an initiative, God will take it the next step. So does Aaron need to do it? Why can't Moshe do it? And maybe that goes back to the question of the Akar Sato, that Moshe needs to have appreciation for the land which he was able to hide the Egyptian. But you know, you can make the argument that God can do all this. What does he need Moshe and Aaron all for? Okay, I mean, we can make that argument. Yeah, same. Right, and that's...
So that, to me, says that's why the frogs made the difference.
Right, and that is... But that the point is that after the blood, Paro doesn't say, all right, you guys can go. But after the frogs, he says, you guys can go, until it ends. Okay, now, after that, when's the next time Paro says they can go? Okay, when's the next time Paro says they can go? Anybody know? Nope. Arov. Page 332. Okay. Paro says, Pasuk Chaf Aleph, 21. Right there. Arov. Now, what the Arov is a fascinating discussion. I'm not going to go into it. Suffice it to say that Rabbi Aryeh Kaplan, in his purple chumash, the Lilin Torah, which was up there, but I think somebody took it on Shabbos and didn't put it back, he has about 15 possibilities as to what the Arov is. So I'm just going to leave that as something for you to look up if you're interested. But in Pasuk Aval, Paro calls Moshe and Aaron by Yomer, and he says, L'chu zivchu le'loichem ba'aretz. Go worship your God, or zivchu means bring offerings to your God, ba'aretz. What does ba'aretz mean? Which land? Presumably his land, right? He's not telling them to go to the Aretz, right? He's not saying go to Eretz Israel. He's saying go in the land. Like, I mean, just, you know, go off in the frontier somewhere. But only so far.
They still lived in Goshen, no?
That's a good question. We saw at the very beginning of last week's Parsha B'nei Yisrael paruva yishutu vayirbu vayatzu v'mo'od v'atim alei ha'aretz osam. So they could be everywhere. And that's why Paro said, look, they're everywhere, so we need to enslave them. So, yeah, they're probably largely concentrated in Goshen, but they're not only in Goshen. And the proof, by the way, is Pesach. Right? Pesach, remember, skips over some doors and hits other doors. That means that they're living together. Okay, I mean, whatever that means, even though they're slaves. So Moshe says, we can't do it in this land because we're going to be slaughtering the Toavas Mitzrayim, which I think we talked about a few weeks ago. Toavas Mitzrayim is something which is, you know, that Egypt would not be pleased with our doing. So rather, what we need to do, Pasuk of Gimel, Derech Shloshes Yomim Nelech Bamidbar, and Zavachnu L'Hashem Elokeinu Kasher Yomar Eleinu. We're going to go on a 3-day journey. Paro says, nope, not doing that. I'm sorry, that's not what he says. He says, Anochi Shalach Eschem, I will send you. Uzvachtem L'Hashem Elokeinu Bamidbar. You can go into the wilderness. However, just don't go too far. I'm not letting you out completely. I'm letting you go on the 3-day journey that you're asking for. Just don't go too far. And even Atiru Badi, you know, pray for me, basically. So Moshe says, no problem. That's what I'll do. But don't play this kind of trick anymore. Look at what he says in Pasuk Hey. Rak al Yosef Paro Asel Livilti Shalach Asam Lizbach Lashem. So you just agreed to let us go. So I'm going to pray that the Arov leaves, but don't go back on your promise. So Moshe goes out and he does what he has to do, and Paro checks to see that all the Arov is gone. And what does he do? Last line of the page. Moshe said, "Don't go back on your word." What does Paro do? Right. And then what does he do? Goes back on his word. So we already have two times that Paro agreed to let them go, and then he doesn't let them go. The next plague is Dever, and again, here is where you have very clearly where Paro sees Pasuk. So in Pasuk, one second, Pasuk Dalet, you see Vifloshem and Miknei Yisrael and Miknei Mitzrayim, that God is going to make a distinction between the animals of the Israelites and the animals of the Egyptians, and none of the Israelite-owned animals are going to die. And in Pasuk Zion, Paro sends out a message to find out, he wants to get a report. And what does he hear? None of the animals owned by Israelites died, and he's stubborn again. Okay, we have the boils. In the boils, Paro does not say that they can leave. But then we get to Barad. Barad is the plague of hail. Take a look on page 336. Pasuk Yudalad, 14, second verse on the page. I'm going to send all of my wonders, all of my plagues to your heart, to your servants, and to your nation. Why? So that you will know. Remember, that goes back to what the goal of the plagues is now. That there's nobody like me in all of the land. Paro, sorry, but you asked for this. You said, who is Hashem? You will know who Hashem is. Pasuk Chaf. Hayarei istivar Hashem yavdei paro enisis avadavis b'nei labatim. Those who got the message already, who understand that there's a God here, the God of the Israelites, and he's running the show, they listen to the warning. You don't want your animals, your people, anything to die? Bring them indoors. V'asher lo samli bo'al devar Hashem v'yazovis avadavis b'nei labasadeh. Whoever didn't listen, they left their servants, their animals out in the field. Okay, then the Torah describes in devastating detail what the barad did, what the hell did. And for those who were wondering, look in Pasuk Chavav, page 338. Okay, and this is a good question, right? In the sense of this is a proof. Certainly that B'nai Yisrael are in Goshen, but what about those who are not in Goshen? Yeah. So that's an interesting question. But it says, Rak be'eretz Goshen asher sham B'nai Yisrael lo haya barad. So now it could be, for example, if what I said before is correct, that they're living everywhere, then it could be that Moshe lets the B'nai Yisrael know, hey guys, I know you're in your homes and whatever, but it might be a good idea to hang out in Goshen for a little while. Because some devastation is going to be going on. Or stay indoors. I mean, that option is also available to them. But in Goshen, it's sunny, and there's not a cloud in the sky. Paro calls to Moshe and Aaron, and what does he say? Look at this, it's unbelievable. Considering where Paro was at the end of last week's Parsha, where is Paro now, Pasuk of Zayin? Chatasi apam, Hashem HaTzadik. He says, I have sinned. Hashem is righteous, v'ani v'amir Hashem, and I am wicked. Hatiru el Hashem. I mean, look at him. He sounds like a good balabas to the Rosh Yeshiva. Rebbe, pray for me, right? Pray on my behalf. And that's it. And Moshe says, I'm going to. And look what he says at the end of Pasuk Chavtes. The Barad lo ye'od, it's not going to be anymore. Leman teida, so that you will know. Ki Hashem aretz. Who owns this land? You, Paro? No, not you. Hashem owns the land. And you and your servants, I knew that, you know, it's basically time. You're going to be fearful of God. And so what happens is Moshe has it end, Pasuk Lamed Daled, and then the same old script. He saw that everything ended, and so he continued to sin. He hardened his heart. Hashem strengthened Paro's heart. He didn't send the people out. So you see that Paro in this one, even before the plague, Paro was ready to send them, but he just didn't want to let them go on account of his concerns. And you'll see at the beginning of next week's Parsha, which is of course in the aftermath of the plague, but it's really describing not the aftermath of Barad, but the prequel. To the plague of locusts, where Paro is ready to let them go based on negotiations. Then after locusts, he's ready to let them go again. But he keeps on going back. But I think that we've established that it's clear what the purpose of the plagues has become. There are two purposes. Initially, the goal was, as Avram was promised, that after their slavery, I'm going to judge the nation that enslaved them. And after I judge them, they will leave with great wealth. In other words, Israel will leave with great wealth. Your descendants will leave with great wealth. Does God say, I will kill that nation? I will wipe out their army? No, he doesn't wipe that out. I mean, I mentioned this on Shabbos. But that's because originally that wasn't the goal. Paro took things to an extreme. In terms of the degree of slavery, Paro took things. Paro changed the whole thrust of the plagues when he denies God, and so you see over and over and over again that Paro recognizes God, but he still doesn't say, you know what, God is right, and I need to let everybody go until the plague of firstborn. But one thing that
it's almost as though he's in competition with Hashem.
Yeah, and it's a yeah. I mean. You know, if you want to, you want to ask the question of why does God seem to have such an ego? Like, what does he really care? And the answer is, I don't know. If you made the world, wouldn't you want people to at least say, you know what, I recognize that you made the world? And Paro fancies himself a god. So what ends up happening is, what's the last moment that Paro exists in, at least in the story of the Torah? Right, but there has to. Listen, there's a certain comedian who's now in prison, okay, for let's just say not such nice behavior with women. But he has one. He has, you know, his comedy was always pretty clean, and he has one thing about where he's just talking about religion, and he says, "I believe in God. I believe in the Lord. I don't know all you atheists out there, you know, what you're going to do, but I've seen the ground shaking, and I know what that means. I believe in the Lord." So, there has to come a point in time when you realize, you know, your necromancers can't copy what's going on. There is a greater power here. And so, what ends up happening, and with this I'm going to conclude, is the last time that we see Paro is right before the sea closes down on the Egyptians. And what's the last line that he says? Well, I mean, it's not Paro, but it's Mitzrayim. Vayomer Mitzrayim, the top of page 374 Anusam ibnei Yisrael, I shall flee before Israel. Where are they going to flee? They're already stuck in the mud. They can't get away. What's the next word? Ki Hashem milcham lahem b'mitzrayim. Because Hashem is fighting with them. Hashem is fighting for them against Egypt. So what's the last thing that Egypt does before they drown? They recognize God. So you can even make an argument that these people did tshuva and had a one-way ticket to... You can make...
You sit in jail.
Right, it's unbelievable. But what can you say? Mission accomplished. That's what God wanted them to learn. And so that's what ends up happening. So what we see in this parsha is this groundbreaking thrust of, on the one hand, convincing B'nai Israel that they want to leave, and that shift does take place in the middle of the plagues, and as well, having Egypt learn what they're up against, which they ultimately do come to learn when the story comes to its conclusion.